make sure this works. So we're going to get going in about 30 seconds here, so if you could all return to your seats, that'd be great. Dr. V. Shukla is our next speaker. She's also from Dow AgriSciences, and she will be presenting a talk entitled Precise Genome Modification in the Crop Species ZMAs.
Thanks, Bob. So in the first talk of this session, you guys actually heard about development of a multigenic trait called SmartStax. And for any of you who have actually had breeding and introgression experience, you know how difficult, how like mind-bogglingly difficult it could sometimes be to combine 5 or 8 independently segregating transgenes into a single variety. I hope by the end of my talk today, what I'll show you is that we've actually developed and demonstrated and validated a technology that can really accelerate the process of developing multigenic traits. We've used this technology in maize, which I'll show you some examples of, as well as other crops, and we feel that the technology is beyond proof of concept and ready for deployment, and that's what we're doing. So the title of my talk is Genome Modification in Maize Using Zinc Finger Nucleases, and I'll start by just introducing you to the technology a little bit. So zinc finger nucleases are zinc finger proteins. Zinc finger proteins are naturally occurring transcription factors. They are, in fact, the most abundant class of naturally occurring transcription factors found in eukaryotic systems. And in their role as transcription factors, they have evolved over time to contain motifs and domains that allow them to recognize and bind to specific DNA sequences. That's how they do their job in nature. And these DNA binding proteins, they're called zinc fingers because they have a finger-like motif structure and coordinate a zinc ion, are fairly well characterized structurally. We know they have an alpha helix and 2 beta pleated sheets. And moreover, we also know that there are components on that alpha helix that define what that sequence recognition specificity is. In other words, there are particular amino acids, when they have a particular composition, confer a binding specificity for a particular DNA triplet. And it's this structure function knowledge that really provides the basis for the technology developed around zinc finger proteins, and particularly zinc finger nucleases. The core of our technology platform really consists of two things. It consists of a deep archive of actual finger modules, actual physical assets, DNA encoding these types of protein structures that are very well characterized. We know what their binding specificity is, and we know something about the kinetics of binding, both in isolation and next to other fingers. And furthermore, the other component of our platform is a very deep and very constantly evolving database that captures information about the structure function knowledge and information and allows us to make predictions about what the preferred binding sites or preferred modules for any given sequence are. So taken together, those two components, the actual finger modules themselves and the associated informatics and ability to mine that information and use that information to make predictions, forms the basis for the zinc finger technology platform, which we're calling EXACT. You know, I work in industry, we like to give things names. Okay. So what we have here is the ability to design zinc finger proteins that can recognize essentially any sequence. And once those zinc finger proteins are designed, they can be concatemerized to generate recognition sequences that are multiple nucleotides in length. For example, a 3-finger protein, when concatemerized, would recognize 9 base pairs, 4, 12, et cetera, et cetera. And as you can imagine, in a complex genome like a crop, the longer your recognition sequence, the more likely it is to be uniquely represented in the genome. Once we've designed a binding modules, we can then functionalize that module by adding on, through a linker and a synthetic protein, a functional domain that carries out a job at that DNA sequence. And that domain can be an activation or repression domain, like what occurs in naturally occurring transcription factors, and that would control transcriptional activation or repression of an endogenous gene. Or it could be a domain that induces cleavage at that recognition sequence. And that's what I'm going to focus on for the rest of this presentation. So what I'm going to be telling you about are engineered proteins that have highly specific DNA recognition capacity, and then are able to, through the modification of a functional domain, induce cleavage at that recognized DNA sequence. So these proteins are known as zinc finger nucleases, and here's a little schematic cartoon of how they actually work. So zinc finger nucleases actually function as a dimer, and the nuclease domain that does the job is what's known as a FOC1 nuclease. It's a type 2 endonuclease restriction enzyme. And we know from our structural analysis that we can design fingers that contain these binding domains on the right and left side, monomers that together form a functional dimer, and that there is a particular DNA spacer in between where the FOC1 actually induces its break. We've characterized this in depth, and therefore we know not only that the break occurs, but where it occurs in that six base pair sequence. It's essentially a symmetrical break. This dimeric FOC1 nuclease domain induces double-stranded breaks. It really has a very simple job. It has to find its recognition sequence, bind to its recognition sequence, and induce that double-stranded break. What happens next is entirely dependent on the biology of the cell. And we know that when a double-strand break is induced, either from a zinc finger nuclease or irradiation, other mutagenic types of activities, that DNA repair mechanisms are invoked. And we know something about these DNA repair mechanisms from the pioneering work of Holger Puchta and Barbara Hohn and many others who work in this field. When a double-stranded break is induced, and the first thing that happens is that the cell's machinery starts to look for a way to fix it, and it scans for a donor molecule that contains homology to the break site to act as a template for that repair. Now, that donor molecule, for example, could come from a sister chromatid, or it could be exogenously supplied by a researcher in the lab. And once that donor molecule is detected, the mechanism that's induced is known as homology-directed repair. And I'll show you more detail on the schematics of that later. Well, homology-directed repair, if it was mediated by an exogenously supplied donor, could mediate gene correction. And what I mean by that is one could design a donor that contains exact sequence identity to the induced break site, with a couple of changes, maybe change one amino acid to another. This is what we call as gene correction or editing of an endogenous gene, and that donor is used as a template for that repair. Another mechanism for homology-directed repair would be that the exogenously supplied donor contains fragments of homology to that break site, but in addition contains a stuffer or heterologous sequence in the middle of it, for example, a transgene. That donor, again, is used as the template to repair this double-stranded break and thereby allows targeted, sequence-specific DNA insertion. Finally, if a donor is not detected, the mechanism of repair that's invoked is known as non-homologous end joining. This is a classic ligation-like reaction where the broken ends come together and repair the break. And this mechanism tends to be error-prone. You have a few insertions or deletions of the DNA sequence at that break site. That's a perfect venue for non-homologous end joining for targeted mutagenesis, thereby leading to sequence-specific gene disruption. And I'm going to show you examples of both of these. So we started with our favorite gene in corn. It doesn't really matter what it is, as long as you have some sequence. We picked one that we knew something about the sequence and about its functionality. ZMIPK1 encodes an enzyme in the phytate biosynthetic pathway that leads to accumulation of phytate in the embryo of maize seeds. We looked at the sequence of this gene, and we also knew that there was a paralog of this gene, another member of the gene family, in the maize genome. And that those two sequences, our intended target, ZMIPK1, and the off-target paralog, ZMIPK2, differed from each other by few base pairs. In fact, they're 98% identical, but there are various accordingly highlighted here SNPs throughout the coding region. So we picked regions in this gene to design zinc finger modules to bind to that would exploit these SNPs, and we wanted to test, can these designs differentiate between one copy or the other? We tested, we generated a number of zinc fingers using our algorithms for prediction, which essentially starts with a combinatorial approach, tiles the entire sequence, and then predicts which ones are going to actually bind with high efficacy. We generated a number of zinc finger pair combinations, tested them in our proxy system, which is a yeast colorimetric-based reporter system for binding and cleavage. Out of that assay, picked four particular designs and took those forward in maize, and they were all efficacious. One of the things I'd like to point out about these designs, let me remind you that the zinc finger nucleases act as a dimer with a right and a left protein. All the designs that we generated, two for one part of exon 2 and two for another part of exon 2, differed between each other in their binding specificity by only one nucleotide. When we tested them in the yeast proxy system, they bound to their targets and had very reduced or no binding to the off-target paralog. That tells us that these designs are very specific for their intended target and do not recognize things that are different from their intended target by only one base pair. This is very powerful in a highly redundant and complex genome like maize or any other crop species. The experiment we did was simple and crude. We expressed our zinc finger nuclease in cell culture using a direct DNA delivery system called Whiskers, isolated genomic DNA from this culture in bulk, amplified our target, and used 454 ultra-deep sequencing to interrogate the genome at the target locus. What we would expect to find if the zinc finger nuclease had cleaved and resulted in non-homologous end joining repair would be small mutations at that target. And in fact, that's exactly what we saw. So when we expressed the right and left proteins in maize cell culture for 24 to 48 hours, so this is transient expression only, we're not selecting for stable transformation, we find the kinds of mutations one expects to see at the target locus. The experiment was repeated at the off-target locus, and we didn't see any mutations, confirming the specificity. Then we wanted to test whether or not we could drive the homologous recombination or homology-directed repair mechanism, which I want to make sure we're all clear, because there's geneticists in the room, I'm sure. This is not true homologous recombination. This is akin to gene conversion, where you have D-loop formation and gene conversion at the induced break site. We designed donors that contained a heterologous gene, in this case conferring an herbicide tolerance that would allow us to select for both random and targeted integration of our transgene, and did just that, delivered it analogous to in the previous slide. In this case, we had a plasmid encoding the zinc finger nuclease and a separate plasmid encoding one of those donor constructs. Put them in cell culture, selected them for herbicide tolerance, and then carried out PCR-based genotype and sequencing of the target. In the case of wild type, we saw only the wild type allele, and in several targeted events, I'm showing you just a few examples here, we saw both the wild type and the disrupted allele, indicating that the herbicide tolerance cassette had inserted in our target gene. In some cases, we also saw only the targeted allele, indicating that this was a biallelic or instant homozygous at the T0 stage. This is in cell culture. There's no meiotic divisions that have happened yet. So this is bona fide biallelic integration and not a potential gene conversion event. When we sequence all of these PCR products, we see exactly what we expect to see. Our transgene is inserted precisely where it should be, the genome donor boundaries are preserved, and the fidelity of the integration is extremely high. Based on all that PCR and sequencing, we calculated what the various frequencies of targeted versus random integration are. And I'm not going to go through all these numbers. I just want to make two points. One, not all zinc finger designs are created equal. Some are more efficacious than others. Therefore, our yeast proxy system is a good quantitative measure to predict what's going to work. And the second is that the frequency of targeted integration versus random integration is an order of magnitude higher than what's been observed in the absence of an induced double-stranded break. So what we think is happening here is that the break is actually necessary to drive that high-frequency homology-directed repair. We confirmed the results with a series of southern blots. I won't go into it in a lot of detail except to say that the targeted integration we observed with our PCR genotyping was consistent, 100%, with the results we saw with genomic southern blots. The transgene inserted where it was expected to insert, and in some cases only at the targeted site, indicating that these were single copy insertions with no concomitant random integration of the transgene in these events. And finally, in those same events, there was no integration of the zinc finger nuclease itself, confirming what we had seen earlier, that a transient burst of zinc finger activity is sufficient to drive the homology-directed repair mechanism in the presence of a donor. So in these events, at the T0 stage, we have single copy, targeted transgene insertion with no concomitant random insertion or integration of the zinc finger itself, essentially perfect events. These events are stable. They segregate as you would expect them to. Mendel was right. That's good to know. And they confer the phenotype that we expected to see in terms of both herbicide tolerance and modification of the phytate phenotype. We can empirically test the specificity of our zinc fingers, and we've done that. These zinc fingers do not target any off-target sequences or any sequences elsewhere in the genome. We detected no mutated alleles at any of the other predicted sites or empirically determined sites. And it isn't unique to that particular locus or those particular zinc finger designs. We recapitulated this entire experimental scheme at a unique cytogenetically distinct locus, and the results were very consistent. So what does this mean? Based on the size of our zinc finger archive, we did some calculations relative to the maize genome. Based on those calculations, our current archive depth is sufficient to allow the design of at least 80 unique zinc finger proteins to any given gene in the maize genome. The probability that one out of those 80 is going to be highly efficacious is greater than 90%. This allows us to do something that has been a longstanding goal for plant biology, which is to generate targeted integration of transgenes. And you can see how this might be used to generate molecular stacks at a single locus. So in the case of the SMART stacks, you have 8 independently segregating genes that one has to track and monitor and try and combine in a single genome. Using this technology, we can reiteratively or even simultaneously insert multiple genes at precisely the same or precisely defined sequences within the genome, thereby generating molecular stacks at a single locus, which will segregate as such. You can choose where you want to put these things. You may want to disrupt a gene, like in the examples I've shown you here, or you may want to find a neutral safe harbor locus. Obviously, that's something that would be of great benefit for the iterative loading or even unloading of transgenes into a maize genome. So I'll just summarize by saying that we've designed highly specific, highly efficacious zinc fingers that hit their intended target, and we've demonstrated the mutagenesis as well as targeted integration. We're able to recover at a fairly high frequency clean events that have only the intended changes, and this is not unique to a particular locus or a particular gene. I'll just wrap it up by saying that with this technology, there are multiple functionalities that are enabled. I've shown you examples of adding a targeted gene addition. I've shown you examples of delete, where we've done targeted mutagenesis. Let me also say that in our internal research program, we've demonstrated physical excision of a piece of DNA. So imagine that you need to use a selectable marker to generate your trait. Go ahead and put it in. You can take it out later. We've demonstrated editing or rewriting of genome sequences by designing a donor that contains those encoded changes and allowing it to integrate in. And I haven't talked at all about this, but we actually have demonstrated targeted modulation of gene expression using zinc finger activators and repressors, and hopefully that work will be coming out in the literature fairly soon. Thank you for your attention. I'm happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we don't have time for questions. But we have to move on to the next talk. But
well, I'm around.
Yes, I'm sure you can track her down if you have other questions. So our next speaker, when I get it here.